Sometimes longer isn't better. So if you're looking for a fantasy NFL game that doesn't last all season, try Paddy Power Fantasy. Every game week is a season in itself. Try it for free on our super short, super free contest on this Sunday's 6pm games. The top 1,500 customers in the contest win a prize with £1,000 for first place. Search Paddy Power Fantasy to pick your team. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18+.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Speaking of which, breaking news, gang. Our friends at Paddy Power Fantasy have created a special show tournament for you this weekend to join for free with up to £1,000 of cash prizes to give away. So it's a daily fantasy tournament only for listeners of the show. You guys can enter for free, get stuck in, cash prizes, what is not to love? And as the boys on social media pointed out, the only con, there are loads of pros, the only con is you might lose to me, which A, thanks for that, fellas, B, extremely unlikely. I am, I'm going to be in the Bengals, Dolphins, Redskins kind of territory down at the bottom of this one. But you guys, I'm sure, will do a lot better. We are pushing out the links all across our social media channels. So just head to at the NC Show on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You'll find information there. Or if you head to fantasy.paddypower.com/league/Nat Coombs Show. That's a bit of a mouthful, so I'll do it again. fantasy.paddypower.com/league/Nat Coombs Show. But like I say, we'll push the link out all across social media. I'm Mike, coming up very shortly. Another bit of news. Alistair Kirkwood, MD of NFL UK, had a sit down with him yesterday after the fourth and final London series game to talk all about this year, what's in the future, got into all kinds of things with him. So we're releasing that as a special bonus podcast tomorrow, dropping that tomorrow. That's Thursday on the feed. So if you haven't already subscribed to us on your podcatcher of choice, and you won't miss things like those bonus episodes that drop in, you will not miss a trick. Right, let's get the show on the road and check in with Iron Mike. So Iron Mike, let's get a couple of things straight right off the bat. The black cat on Monday Night Football, they haven't managed to locate him yet, and Rufus cannot account for his whereabouts. So nope. I want to know what's going on.
No, he was out night hawking on Monday. I'm not sure he could make it all the way there, you know, because he doesn't have a passport, not even a dog passport. So
the private jet, though, and the diplomatic immunity probably gets around that.
Yeah, the diplomatic immunity helps a lot, but don't say the J word.
I'll be very careful.
We don't want to. I'm feeling a bit like Jermaine Whitehead, you know, if my Twitter account gets any more venomous, I may have to be put on waivers.
Have you been getting into politics again?
Yeah, sadly, you know, it's that time of year, you know.
Just don't threaten fans like Whitehead did, and you'll be fine.
No, I try not to. The only thing people don't understand is that I am usually right.
I'm not going to argue with that. Hey, listen, the cat gave me some ideas though for a top five this season.
You really are scraping, aren't you? You're scraping.
What do you mean? That's one of the most surreal things I think any of us have ever seen in football. Did you see the commentary that got dropped on it as well?
Absolutely,
that was beautiful. But top five games that have been disrupted by animals. You can think of a few, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it depends on how you define animal, I think. Especially if we're talking like the black hole in Oakland. But
maybe we should move on. All right. That's a bit of homework for you, Iron Mike. Bit of homework. Now, listen, lots to get into. We are going to be hearing from Alistair Kirkwood, an interview I did yesterday. We're dropping the full interview or bonus pod tomorrow. And inevitably, because I sat down with him maybe a couple of hours after the story had broken, we got in to the Chargers, which was a curious article to appear in the first place. Originally ran on The Athletic. And yeah. I think it took everybody by surprise. And within, despite the fact everybody were, or many outlets, I should say, were widely reporting it, there was a fairly instant dose of skepticism, wasn't there, Mike? And Dean Spanos has come out swinging since the article appeared. It seems to be a lot of smoke and mirrors, doesn't it?
Well, according to, although, you know, when it's Dean Spanos coming out saying that it's all, as he did, nice. repeatedly more than once, that leads me to believe there's something true in it. The best conspiracy theory I saw was that Rams or someone associated with them was floating this to sort of start to nix the stadium sharing deal, which I've never liked, to be honest, because in a city as big as Los Angeles, and it's the same in New York, why both teams should play in the same stadium bothers me. And this week, of course, we have the Giants and the Jets playing in Giants Stadium, which won't be called Giants Stadium for 1 week because in the NFL, all is mutable, you know, even including stadium names and stuff like that. But I immediately, while doubting, you know, while agreeing with all those who doubt that the Chargers would come, I think the Chargers would be a much better team for London in many ways than
anyone else
that have been proposed along the way, most notably the Jags, for a couple of reasons. One is they have the longer tradition, and they have that glamorous AFL tradition of the early 60s, the Lance Allworth, John Hadle, Keith Lincoln, Big Daddy, Big Cat Ernie Ladd, speaking of cats. secondly, because you could call them the London Light Brigade Chargers.
It doesn't quite roll off the tongue, I Mike, to be honest.
Oh, come on, LBCs! You know, you have a built-in Chargers. You have a built-in radio sponsor, the Light Brigade Chargers. You know, half a league onward, which is perfect because they could win the AFC, and that would be half a league onward.
So instead of the Raiders' autumn win, that's what we would drop at the start of every game.
Absolutely, you know, there is a recording I think of Tennyson reading that poem extant, and it's really scratchy. And, you know, feeble voice because he was very old, but it would be like perfect. And one more thing.
I like the idea, actually, Mike, on that, just having 19th century horseback soldiers, cavalry running around.
I'll give you a recommendation for the folks. There was a band, which was actually one guy called Tom Rapp, but he did have a sort of band in the beginning called Pearls Before Swine. And they made a couple of records on ESP Records, which was a great label. And one of the tunes on one of the early records is called Trumpeter Lanfrey. And it has this audio of the last surviving trumpeter from the Battle of Balaclava. And then he blows the trumpet call. I think it was actually faked, but it sounds fantastic. Anyway, I've also rearranged the AFC to allow for the move, because people were saying,
"You have got that's quick work, Mike."
It wasn't hard. I mean, people were saying this was impossible. Here's what you do, right? The London Light Brigade Chargers move to the AFC East.
I haven't signed off on the name, by the way, yet.
Okay, I have. Okay. And I'm rarely wrong, remember. They move to the AFC East, which makes sense because New England, the Jets, and Buffalo. You move Miami to the AFC South.
Whoa, what are you talking about?
Because they are, after all, in the South. And you move Houston to the AFC West, taking the place of the Chargers. And everybody's happy, except for you and the people who want to beat up on the Jets. twice a year.
Might make life more competitive for Miami. Speaking of which, that was one of the other stories that broke yesterday regarding London, which was the announcement the Dolphins are definitely going to be playing an international series game next year. And so the question is, will it be in Mexico? Will it be in London? And that's something I got into a little bit with Alistair in terms of the competition that is out there internationally, right? And there's been rumblings of a game in Germany, possibly. I think a lot of this, Mike, interested in your perspective, is dependent on the number of games a season. So if the CBA goes a certain way and we see a 17 or 18 game, realistically 18 game season, there are more games to go around and more games will appear internationally. If that doesn't happen, do you think there's a real chance, without a franchise, that London will stay frozen at the 4-game level because the other games that are offered up are going to go elsewhere around the world?
I think London probably expands even farther. I mean, Alistair would know more about this than me, but you know, you have a system that works and an infrastructure here, and you would have to, I suspect, create a new infrastructure in a couple of places. Now, obviously, Mexico is prime territory for them. I think Japan could easily do, you know, some expansion as well. And as you said, Germany's been talked about is coming back.
China's interesting too, right?
Everybody wants to get into China. The question is, at the moment following the NBA's experience, you know, what's going to be. The NFL may see this as an opportunity to sort of, you know, get a leg up on the NBA.
I would think they would, yeah.
But, you know, one of the problems is that basketball is rather big in China, you know, since the days of Lao Meng and other Chinese players playing in the NBA. And there's no, you know, football would be an entertainment there, which is probably a good thing and probably would attract, you know, quite a bit of attention. But they've been very cautious is the wrong word, but careful, I think, would be the word. They've built slowly, and they've built successfully. And I've always thought, you know, that there's no sense in taking risks with this international program because you want to keep everybody happy. You want the teams and the owners and the coaches and to have the best conditions possible. Yeah. And you want the fans to get the best experience possible. So, you know, I might be a little bit conservative in that sense. And if it's not broke, don't fix it. But I do
the
think
first time
slow,
in your life.
Yeah, I do think slow expansion is probably the way to go. Right. And I'm still a bit hesitant on whether or not, a London franchise actually happens and whether or not it's actually the better idea. Cause I really think what we've got now is really good. Yeah. And I see pratfalls for a 8 or even 9 game a year, franchise
with
playing in London.
I agree. I mean, there's many complications. The more that they, you know, back-to-back games, they're talking potentially about back-to-back Jags games next season as well. The more they just keep pushing forwards, it does.
Yeah, and that's going to have to happen. Yeah, I mean, if a team were to play in London, they would probably want to do most of their season based on back-to-back home games, back-to-back road trips. You know,
maybe even a longer homestand, like 3-4 games potentially.
Yeah, it's possible, but that gives them a big advantage schedule wise. And
the Raiders are actually doing that this season, right? They had road run and then
yeah, they had that. That well, that you know, that was that's inevitable because of the stadium considerations. And once they're in the parking lot at Caesar's Palace, things will be all right.
I can't wait. Like, hey, listen, pencil in the draft because that is happening. As I remind our listeners every week in Vegas, we're going to be there.
Speaking of the draft, how you
stop
like
clicking,
that,
Mike? Stop clicking your pen.
Oh, sorry. Speaking of the draft. That can segue us really nicely to Khalil Mack.
You're a pro, Mike.
How do you like that trade now? We're switching roles here momentarily.
I like it. I mean, the Raiders, of course, vilified for so many reasons, but that trade in particular, but for the majority of that season, I guess at the time people thought they got the better of the Amari Cooper deal, although that's probably a pick'em, right? But yeah, Khalil Mack, are we looking revisionism? Are we looking that maybe the Raiders weren't so stupid after all?
Yeah, I love the fact that the same mouth clowns who were saying that Gruden and Mayock were idiots for making the trade are now saying that they're geniuses. You know, talk about outcome bias. The whole world of sports talk, internet, whatever, is just completely based on outcome bias, and everybody's always right because they're working on that line. I mean, Chicago still has to feel that they got what they wanted in Khalil Mack, and the reason the Mack trade is being reevaluated primarily is Mitch Trubisky.
Exactly. It's not because the defense isn't working or Mack isn't working. It's because his teammates aren't playing.
Yeah, and the defense has lost Akeem Hicks, which has turned out to be a bigger loss than I think anybody thought it would be. But Mack is more or less doing what he's supposed to do, and although he's constantly and almost always double teamed and hasn't, racked up the sack levels that he has, and Hicks's presence is something to do with that. But what people are seeing, and it's what we said, I think, starting with the London game, maybe the week before, is that you see what Gruden's plan is, what he's trying to do, and they have basically worked through free agency to do that. He's put together a big offensive line, you know, really big beefs, and he's running behind it, and Josh Jacobs is the guy that he got. in the Mac trade with the pick from the Mac trade. And that's all working really well. And if he had Jonathan Abram, who was the guy they got with the Amari Cooper pick, he got hurt in preseason, so he's not playing. But he's a safety and he'd probably be starting. And
he looked like nonsense, didn't he? Yeah, he looks like the real deal from
absolutely, yeah. You know, and Farrell, who was the most questionable. I thought their draft picks actually got better as the first round went on.
Yeah.
But he's solid. He's not spectacular.
Yeah, a lot of people slagged out of that pick, didn't they? The Cleveland Farrell pick, and said he was undersized and he wasn't going to be able to handle it in the league. But,
yeah, they wanted,
you like what you've seen so far from
him. Yeah, they sort of wanted a big physical player. Not necessarily a Josh Allen, you know, a tremendous pass rusher, but more of sort of a Calais Campbell type, who they could, you know, slide inside in passing downs, let the guys on the outside do the heavy duty pass rushing. And, you know, they still do need to more or less replace Mac. That was what I think Arden Key was supposed to do, you know, among others, but they have another pick from the Bears coming up next year, which ought to be a top 10 pick the way the Bears are playing right now.
Right.
So that's pretty good. And you know, they lost, what was it, a third and a fifth in the Antonio Brown trade, but they did get a third, next year from the Bears. So that helps, that makes up for that loss. And Chicago's got a second from them, but that second now is looking like it'll be a bottom third pick in the second round. So not as great as they might have thought it would be. So I think, you know, that if the Bears were playing better on offense, people would think the trade worked out much better. But what you see is a lot like what the Jags, remember when the Jags had that great run in the late season, you know, and should have beaten the Patriots in the playoffs, and came back and beat the Patriots in their Super Bowl in like week three of the next season and then tanked the entire season. But when you have a great defense, you have to stop the other team. But if you depend on turnover luck, if you depend on getting the interceptions and turning in the right places and turning them into points and recovering 2/3 of the fumbles in every game, and, you know, Eddie Jackson giving you more offense than any of your wide receivers, you know, you can't depend on that year after year.
Levels out in the end.
Yeah. Exactly. So even if you have a great defense, if it's holding other teams to 16 points a game, that's great. But if your offense is only generating 16 points a game and your defense isn't generating anything, you're in a bit of trouble. And Trubisky has just regressed so far in this season. Matt Nagy, I saw an interesting stat actually. The 9 points that they laid on Philadelphia. The nine yards they laid on Philadelphia in the first half was the lowest total in the NFL for, it was something like six seasons. The previous low had been 7 yards, and that was the Chiefs. And who was the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs that year? It was Matt Nagy.
Oh, wowzers. Fantastic records. He's thrilled about you reminding him about that, Mike, I'm sure. I'm glad you mentioned the Jags. So that's another big story, of course, that's broken in the last day or so. Inevitably, we knew a decision was coming after their really disappointing performance at Wembley and Gardner Minshew's disappointing performance at Wembley. Nick Foles is back. We spent a fair amount of the broadcast talking about it. A lot of Colin Minshew is dedicated to, what's Doug Marrone going to do? Well, he's made a call early. He said he'd take the bye week, but he's only taken a little bit of the bye week because he announced late yesterday that Nick Foles is going to go back into the starting lineup and will suit up for the Jags after the rest week. So what do you make of that call? Is it the right call, Mike?
Well, we talked about it a little on Sunday during the game. And to me, the safe thing to do in these situations, I think, is always to stick with the guy who's there and then replace him when he needs to be replaced.
And is that what's happened, do you think, based on what we saw?
Therefore, well, I think it's a little overreacting to that. But what we saw, Gardner Minshew's performance, and you can't blame it per se on the offensive line because the offensive line is what it is. Mm. So, you know, your quarterback has to deal with that. And, you know, I think I think if they could run the ball, Minshew would have been better. If he had a little more time to pass, he would have been better. If his receivers gave him a little more help, he would have been better.
Exactly.
And if the referees had given his receivers one or two breaks, which they should have, he would have been better. But the main thing with Minshew's performance was that Romeo Crennel was out to confuse him. And they were changing coverages before the snap all the time. And Minshew was sometimes reading those wrong, and his receivers were reading them wrong as well, I think, which was part of the problem. So I think going back to the veteran is not a bad move here. You know, Minshew has given you far more than you would expect from a sixth-round quarterback in his rookie year. So you're fine there. But this is what you brought Nick Foles in for.
You didn't trade him
up before the trading. This is the best time to make a change when you have the bye week to put everything in and work. So it makes sense in that. I'm not going to argue with it.
And he was prepared as well, obviously, because he went out in the season opener. It's not like he went out early preseason. So, you know, you'd assume he is pretty familiar with the offense, the game plan they always wanted to engender this season. And Mike, I guess as well, I know Minshew is a great character and we've all, you know, loved the role that he's been on. And that will be the last we see of him. But Nick Foles was brought in to be the franchise quarterback. We're talking 8 games. It would be very, very underhand, I think, of Marone and Co. not to put him back in the lineup when they've sold him on the franchise, brought him to the franchise, said, you're our guy. And then on the basis of a handful of exceptional performances, a couple of so-so performances and a couple of bad performances from a rookie, albeit an uber charismatic rookie, it would be really, I think, odd not to install your franchise QB back in there. It's not as if, you know, we're talking about say it was Blake Bortles, for example, right? Like Bortles last season and this happened. I think that would be a different situation. But this is a guy you brought in to take you to the next level. And so,
yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And when in OC's interview with Minshew, he asked him about Foles, and Minshew was saying how Foles was being really supportive and helpful and, you know, taking him through the offense and stuff like that, which also says to me that Foles is being active with the team, you know, and that's going to be easier for him to come back in. But, you know, look at Nick Mullins, for example, with San Francisco last year. Did anybody seriously think Nick Mullins goes into training camp as the number one quarterback?
Sure. But probably some of the jabber jaws, some of the talking heads you love, but dropped a few of those.
Yeah, but you know, what happens is as the season goes on, the unknown quarterback's limitations start to show up, and defensive coordinators around the league start to try to take advantage of them. And the most notable one being, of course, that he is a rookie quarterback, and that his year at Washington State, although I think it prepared him pretty well for what the Jags did, was really his only year as a full-time starter. He shared time at East Carolina for 2 years. You know, and graduated early so he could transfer as a graduate transfer to Washington State, which is kind of the new free agency market in college football. Russell Wilson did that a few years ago from NC State to Wisconsin. And you know, smart players can take advantage of their redshirt year, get their academic work done without losing the year of eligibility of football, so that when they're ready to graduate, they still have a year of eligibility left. And Minshew did that basically. He had a year in junior college and, he had, a little bit of time at, Troy, and he accumulated credits during those years and got out. So I think he'll be back. Foles is injury prone, remember. So he's in a good situation. He's proven he can start, and he will get better with experience. And, you know, I think right now sitting on the sideline and watching Foles for a little while is not going to be a bad thing for him.
Now, Mike, I want to move on to we'll come back to quarterbacks, and you'll see why in a moment, because I want to move on to Monday Night Football and the Ravens laying it on the Patriots. I'm going to dive into the mailbag for the first time today, Mike, and a tweet from Chris Wilkinson. Thanks for this, Chris, at the NC Show, if you want to follow suit. Mikey asks, has the Patriots defense been flattering to deceive? The Ravens were their first true test of the season, and they failed. A lot of people are suggesting that we've been hearing all season long, it's an easy vanilla schedule. They've got the AFC East, the NFC East. They're not really getting tested too much. So let's not read too much into how dominant the defense has been. They were run on the week before, of course, by Nick Chubb and the Browns, although they dispatched the Browns nevertheless. Run on again by the Ravens. So what did you make of that performance from Baltimore and specifically the Patriots D, and what conclusions, if any, we should draw from it?
It's funny because I went back and read my Patreon column my prediction for the game. And if you read the preview, you would assume the pick was going to be Ravens, which basically I assumed right up until the moment I went to type it. And then this little voice in the back of my head was saying, you know, it's like Bill Belichick's voice in the back of my head saying, we've got something planned for the Ravens. but it worked out pretty much as I had thought. You know, the Ravens are a big physical team and they out-physicaled the Patriots on both sides of the ball, which was always going to be a problem for them. But I thought the Patriots played better. And I thought at one point that they were going to come back and I might be right, you know, and then Julian Edelman had the fumble.
Right.
And that really changed the game because the Patriots were still, you know, it was still tight and they were moving for the lead and they were moving the ball well. And although the numbers are great, in terms of drives, they were still able to keep the Ravens pretty much in check. And you take, you know, it doesn't look good, the score, but the last score obviously is the Humphrey fumble recovery makes the score look a bit worse. And for some reason, Brady had that horrible interception late in the game. But yard wise, there was hardly any difference between them. It was just the rushing, as the tweet says, that was the problem, and it's going to be a problem for them because they were primarily depending on their linebackers to help stop the rush. They played an awful lot of the season with basically a two-man line. They're playing an awful lot of 2-4-5 on defense. Two down linemen, four linebackers, and five DBs. And against Baltimore, that's going to be tough because they're going to power run at you, which means you need to have some beef on the edge. Michael Bennett would have had a whole lot more snaps in this game, I think, if he had still been on the Patriots roster. And because of Lamar Jackson's mobility, you can't really commit to crash your outside linebackers in to stop those runs because they run the option. And, you know, it's an awful lot like Colin Kaepernick with San Francisco when Greg Roman was the offensive coordinator there as well. And a different Harbaugh was the head coach, but he was still a Harbaugh. And you know, the difference is that Lamar Jackson can get through the inside holes better than Kaepernick could. He's got phenomenal quickness, short area quickness, which very few guys have. And that creates another problem. So yeah, I think the Eagles are going to be an interesting game. The Patriots will come off and think they did some things right, but their offense still has to figure out ways around strong defenses that make running the ball difficult for them because their offensive line is not very good. Their left tackle's Marshall Newhouse, who is the definition of a sort of journeyman, a more or less a third tackle for most of his career. They seem to get away from the run a little too quickly. I know that they game plan and stuff, but, you know, Burkhead and White got most of the carries and Sony Michel looked pretty good at the start, but they were throwing to the running backs. In fact, interestingly, the running backs ran for 74 yards and caught four passes for 74 yards.
Right.
It was all bounced out there. Now the positives for them, I think, are Sanu looks good.
Yeah,
looks sharp. He fits right in and they get N'Keal Harry back.
Yeah, I saw that.
After the bye week.
So for listeners here who maybe aren't familiar with that name, of course, he's a rookie wide receiver, first rounder that they
Right. Belichick's
drafted.
First ever first round wide receiver.
Right. So high and hopes for him, but he's been knocked up, so banged up, I should say.
Banged up, yeah. I mean, it's pulled muscles, basically. I mean, it's this thoroughbred syndrome, you know. He's a big size speed kind of guy, a kind of poor man's version of DK Metcalf. Although that's kind of weird to say because Metcalf went after Harry in the draft.
Yeah.
But the Patriots obviously liked what they saw. But you know, here's here's a team that if the cards had fallen differently, next week they could be out there with Josh Gordon, Antonio Brown, Julian Edelman, and N'Keal Harry out there at wide receiver. Yeah. They wouldn't have had to give up a second round pick for Mohamed Sanu.
Maybe they've got him as well. It made it even more devastating. And I'm glad you mentioned that, Mike, because I want to move on to how the cards fall and if things have gone differently and connect that with Lamar Jackson and look back. We were going to do this last week, but the time got the better of us. So I thought we'd wheel it into this week and look back at the 2018 draft.
Right.
Of course, which five quarterbacks went in the first round. The fifth, the last was Lamar Jackson, who went 32nd overall, the final pick of the first round. Ahead of him, we had Josh Rosen. Remember him? Taken at nine.
Well, yeah, the first four guys went in the first 10 picks.
He's right. Rosen went at 9. Josh Allen was 7. Sam Darnold was the third pick overall. And of course, Baker Mayfield was the number one overall pick to the Cleveland Browns. So, Mike, presumably, if you were looking at it differently, rather looking at the draft now, you would recommend that front offices do it differently. What order would you draft? Would you draft Lamar first if you could do this now?
Well, it depends on the team. I mean, this is outcome bias going crazy now, you know. Mayfield's having all kinds of trouble in Cleveland and Lamar's is doing great in Baltimore. But how many teams would take Lamar Jackson and put him in a system that plays to his strong points? You know, there was a lot of criticism of him. A lot of NFL personnel people, some of the mouth clowns, were screaming, he's a wide receiver. You know, he's not going to be able to play quarterback in the NFL. And they obviously hadn't watched his game tape very well because he's an accurate passer when he's given time. You know, and these are the same guys. I hate to name names, but everybody knows one big, very big name guy.
Carefully. Who
talked about Dwayne Haskins as being a running quarterback when he's anything but, you know, who talked about Teddy Bridgewater being a running quarterback when he's not, you know, this wasn't a white commentator either. You know, it wasn't that automatic kind of thing. But when I looked at the draft, and I can't remember where we did it, but we talked about it at the time. And what's interesting about it, what we saw after their rookie seasons, was exactly how much everybody had played exactly the way we thought they would based on their college performance, right, the way they were scouted. Now, I went back and looked, and I had Mayfield first. I liked Mayfield. Rosen second. I didn't like Rosen that much. He reminded me of, I think I said, Kyle Bowler at the time. Darnold third, simply because I thought he needed maturity. Lamar fourth and Allen fifth. And I didn't really have Allen as a first round guy. I thought he would be the guy who went late in the first round. And it's not like Baltimore had their eye on Lamar Jackson, you know, because they had other chances to draft him if they were really keen on him. But it's when they got down to the end of the first round and they saw he was still there, they then traded back into the first round to get him.
That's right. They had the 25th pick, didn't they?
Wasn't plan A. I think they were getting him as a backup. And remember they have RG3 as a backup as well. So they were thinking, well, these two guys will be complementary and, we can move on from the Joe Flacco era. And these guys are sort of the anti Joe Flacco, where Josh Allen might be the prototype. So right now,
but Rosen, just on Rosen, Mike, because you said you weren't big on him coming in, and we've discussed this season.
Well, I mean, I had him second, but I wasn't that keen on him.
Which tells you the strength of the
he's
draft.
He's exactly the kind of quarterback you don't want going to a bad team.
Right. Okay. Well, that's exactly what happened to him. And back to back seasons, of course. And look, almost any rookie quarterback has a difficult to desperate first season in the NFL. Even the greats, right? And so we can't necessarily base too much on his first season in Arizona. Is it more worrying the fact that he's lost his starting gig
Unfortunately, he went from Arizona to a just as bad situation in
Miami.
That's
what I mean, though. In Miami, is that what tells us more than his whole year in Arizona? It's the fact that he can't cement a starting spot in a Miami.
Yeah, because, you know, he's a little skittish in the pocket. He takes a little time to recognize. And when you're getting beaten up like that, it becomes hard to play, which was what he looked like at UCLA, you know, and we were thinking, well, he's been hung out to dry by his coach there, by Chip Kelly. But, you know, this is what it is. Just like, you know, Darnold makes big plays, but makes really stupid mistakes. But I think he has more potential, you know, to be a gunslinger type who could succeed with the right coach in the right system. Allen is an inaccurate thrower, and they, you know, they thought they, the beginning of the year, people were saying, oh, look, he's much more accurate now, but he's reverted back to type, you know, and Lamar, I think, is proving that he can be an accurate passer, but I think every team playing the Ravens from now on is going to concentrate on making him throw from the pocket and dare him to beat you that way, because he's not Deshaun Watson from the pocket. He relies on his mobility, to make plays. He's kind of like a skinny version of Cam Newton, say, but without the huge arm. And Mayfield is another guy who has to be in a system that favors his skills. Which Freddie Kitchens did at the end of last season, but this year it's harder to do, partly because his offensive line is bad. The tackles are bad, at least. Partly because you can't, it's harder to scheme him out of the pocket. And partly because, for whatever reason, the play action part of the game doesn't seem to work for them like it ought to. And I think that's down to the tackles primarily as well, because with Nick Chubb running the ball, they ought to be able, the threat of play action ought to be able to keep Mayfield passing on the outside rather than passing from the pocket in the middle and having to get through all of that stuff. But I mean,
they've only gone to Chubb quite recently, right? I mean, the first.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was one of the first things he did when he took over as offensive coordinator. Last year was to bring Chubb back in, because Hugh Jackson was running him two or three times a game. And one of those runs would always be 60 plus yards, which would say, hey, why don't we try this a little more often? But that wasn't Hugh. So yeah, I mean, I'm perplexed as to why he hasn't done better, but I think it's part of a general malaise at the Browns. And I think his receivers don't fit what Kitchens wants to do, whether it's simply that they don't want to, or, you know, or whether he just can't get them to the right places at the right times, because it has to be a timing oriented kind of offense for Mayfield. He has to know where the ball's going and get it out quickly.
Which is his number one struggle, right? He's that,
yeah,
it's slowest
for a team,
all starting quarterbacks.
Yeah. And for a team with that much talent, you know, they're underachieving, you know, amazingly this year. And you know, it's funny because this week 10 has a lot of kind of games that will determine, you know, Mayfield goes against Josh Allen, and Buffalo in Cleveland this week. The Chargers are at Oakland, you know, which will tell us something about something, you know, Kansas City's
moving to London.
Yeah. Kansas City's on the road in Tennessee, which will be a, you know, if Mahomes is back, I think the Chiefs become automatic favorites. But if it's still Matt Moore, that's pretty much a kind of toss-up game. And the Rams are at Pittsburgh.
Matt Moore alone, he's doing,
you know,
okay.
Minnesota's at Dallas, Seattle's at San Francisco. Those are all tight games, you know, hard to call games, that will, you know, do a lot right now to determine playoff spots. And you know, and maybe the toughest game to pick of the week is Arizona at Tampa Bay. The Bruce Arians Bowl, you know.
Arians Bowl. Well, what our listeners need to do is get on your Patreon column on Mike, because it'll all be picked on Friday, right?
So it will. It will.
Patreon.com.
If I can figure out how to
FMTE.
Yeah, I have to figure out how to, because I'm going to be in Holland on Friday, and I have to figure out how to like automatically get it to post, so I don't have to try.
The producer, he's good with stuff like that. Hey, what are you doing in Holland? Is that work or pleasure?
It's pleasure.
We'll do a separate pod. I want to hear all about that.
The Moritz House in The Hague, and the Rijksmuseum and the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam ought to be nice.
One or two other establishments in Amsterdam, I'm sure. Jay Bell is in the house on Friday for us. He'll be picking the games.
Oh, I'm glad he's not in the house in Amsterdam on Friday. Yeah.
he's at ESPN HQ. Mike, hey, before we go, let's get your top five done and dusted. It's a goodie this week. Top five free agents.
Yeah. And this is amazing. It, cause there's different agents, there's different eras of free agency. And when people think of it now, they think of a guy who's done really well, you know, with one team and then becomes a free agent and goes out on the market. to another. But there was a time when free agency guys were hanging around in weird places. And
we're back in Amsterdam again.
And so, yeah, not that weird. And some of them, you know, some of them were just kind of signed out of the blue. So I've kind of combined those to try to make it.
How many have we got, Mike?
Well, how many do you want? I mean, I could do thousands, but you know, guys who don't make the cut are people like Curtis Martin, Kurt Warner, Rich Gannon, who people forget, you know, was so great, and all the Woodsons, Rod and Charles, all great free agency pickups. So I'm going to start with number five being Warren Moon, who gets signed out of Canada. Because nobody thought he could play quarterback in the NFL, and he goes up to Canada and has a tremendous career up there, and becomes an All-Pro quarterback, a Hall of Famer here. And again, you could stick the NFL Europe Arena League Kurt Warner in the same boat there, and probably did just as well, if not better. So call them a tie for fifth. In fourth, Gary Zimmerman.
Yep.
Who came out of the USFL and went to Denver. He was all USFL. He was all decade in the NFL for two decades as a tackle. One of the greatest, I think, tackles and probably the least appreciated one, of all time. In number three, Deion Sanders.
It was Super Bowl era. So USFL. So he won the Super
Bowl. Mid '80s. He came out of the USFL in the mid '80s and then played for Denver and was all.
The Elway. Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Elway Super Bowl. Deion Sanders, you know, everybody should know that story. Leaves the Falcons, goes to the 49ers, and they win the Super Bowl, goes to Dallas, the arch rivals of the 49ers at that time, and they win the Super Bowl. And, you know, the interesting thing about Sanders was in Dallas, he gave up baseball temporarily because he was playing both Major League Baseball and in the NFL. And at one point was playing for both the Braves and the Falcons in Atlanta, which made it easy.
Wasn't he the only athlete ever to hit a home run and score a touchdown? I think it was a pick six in the same
in a Super Bowl.
Week. Was it or something?
Something like that.
Remarkable stat, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Bo Jackson did both. And there was Jordan, I think, who did it for the Falcons as well. Deion Sanders, that year in Dallas where he didn't play baseball and he could concentrate on football, they played him at wide receiver as well.
Right.
So, and he had like 40 catches or something as a wide receiver. There was a guy called Jack Kellogg, I think out of Cal, if I remember right, who played it for Frankfurt in the NFL Europe, but was with the 49ers. He was sent there by the 49ers. He was a great cornerback, but without the speed. And he said he in practice, Deion would let the receivers beat him, just to see how much ground he could make up while the ball was in the air. So the receiver would kind of come out of his pattern thinking, ha, I just fooled Deion Sanders, and I've got three steps on him, and then the ball would come, and Sanders would kind of come up and knock the ball away. And it would get bigger each time because he was just trying to test his limitations. He said, you've never seen anything like it.
That's brilliant.
I've got a number two guy is Night Train Lane. All Hall of Fame cornerback, mostly with the Lions, originally with the Rams. Night Train Lane played for Fort Ord in the military. He played 1 year of junior college, played minor leagues baseball, and then went in the Army and played at Fort Ord for 4 years. And he's working in an aircraft factory in L.A., and the bus goes by the Rams headquarters. So one day he gets off the bus and brings his scrapbook in and says, why don't you sign me to play football? He's a wide receiver, but they turned him into a cornerback. And this is a guy who, you know.
So that's his version of a highlight reel, right?
Exactly. And you know, the NFL has two rules that were brought on by Night Train Lane. One is the face mask rule, because as soon as face masks came in, he started dragging guys down by the face mask. So they eliminated that. And the other one was what they used to call the Night Train clothesline, where his tackle was basically a head high tackle with his arm and a lariat, they call it in wrestling. And the Night Train necktie, they called it. And that was banned because he could kill somebody, basically. But he was one of the greatest cornerbacks of all time and one of the great secondaries of all time for the Lions with Yale Larry and Dick LeBeau
All right, the great, you know, all of, above, yeah,
yeah, wow. All of whom should be in the, and it was a tie for number one. I couldn't break the tie. The Reggie White, probably the greatest free agent pickup of all time in terms of what I was saying at the top of the show, you know, came out again, another guy who came out of the USFL, played for the Eagles, was amazing. Everybody in the league wanted him, and he surprised everybody by going to Green Bay, where, you know, where he kind of paved the way for urban players to go up to play in Green Bay. And he, I think, more than Brett Favre, was the key to that championship team in Green Bay. And one of the, you know, one of the all-time greats, obviously, as a defensive end. And he's tied with John Unitas. And everybody should know the Unitas story. Undrafted out of Louisville, goes to the Steelers camp, plays pretty well, surprises people, but they have quarterbacks and they don't sign him. He goes back home to, he lived around Pittsburgh, grew up around Pittsburgh, plays semi-pro in a league where they put oil on the fields to keep the dust, because there's no grass. So to keep the dust from blinding everybody, they oil the field before the game. And, all of a sudden he gets a phone call, from the Colts to come in as kind of like a camp arm. And, you know, pretty soon winds up starting for the Colts and goes on to an amazing career. You know, the greatest game ever played, loses to the Jets, although Earl Morrall was starting that year, but has some great battles, those Colts teams with the Packers. So Unitas and Reggie White as the best free agent signings of all time. But, you know, a lot of it in free agency is luck and fit. You know, you have to be in the right place at the right time. And when you sign with a team, and this applies to rookies as well, you know, you need to go into a situation where they recognize what you can and can't do and try to take advantage of it. And, yeah, you know, so many guys, they just say, oh, this is a great player, we'll take him, without realizing that he might not be a great fit for what they want to do.
Right. So, that's so true. And whether it's
kind of like you and your podcasts.
I tell you what, man, it's so much of it is, the more I cover the NFL, so much of it is down to luck and situation, right? In that respect, or the right situation.
Yeah,
right,
absolutely.
Right place, right time. Hey, one more thing I might, before we let you go, you mentioned speed when you were talking about Deion Sanders. Something I wanted to remind you of, that brilliant Tyreek Hill, Damian Williams, play in the Chiefs game when Williams was full pelt in the end zone and Hill just comes out of nowhere. You reminded me, you said that.
Yeah. It's like, I can't remember who it was, but it reminded me of a play where everyone was yelling about the player's speed. And then someone pointed out that the line judge was running stride for stride with him down the sideline for 40 right. yards, you know, yeah, and if he's so damn fast, how come this guy in zebra stripes can keep up with him? But yeah, Hill came out of nowhere on that one. It was like, and you have to look at that game, and that was a great game. I mean, you know, just a great finish. And but you have to look at it and say, you know, how do you not? I know Mike Zimmer always wants to win games by pass rushing you, and you know, and it almost worked with Matt Moore. They were coming at him brutally in the fourth quarter. But how do you not double Tyreek Hill? You know, how do you let Tyreek Hill beat you basically by giving him 12 yards off the line of scrimmage and letting him run these comebacks in front of you? And the other thing I think that has not gone very noted, but did you see that Mike Tomlin challenged two pass interference calls in three plays in the game? Against Indianapolis.
It was so close. And I knew you threw the challenge, but I didn't know they were that.
Tomlin threw, through the first one, and Steve Nelson, who I have no fondness for, Steve Nelson is a walking penalty. And every time he's not called for penalties, I would get angry. But Steve Nelson was covering Zach Pascal, and the ball was way overthrown, and Pascal started to slow up rather than speed up to chase it. And Nelson, who sped up to try to chase it, ran up his back. But it was not pass interference. You know, what can you do in that situation? The ball was not catchable. And Tomlin challenged, and of course Brad Allen said the play stands as called, you know, because that's what New York said. So then like two plays later, Pascal catches a ball with an obvious push off, almost like the one in our game at Wembley. You know, was he extending his arms and pushing off? It was much more obvious in this one than it was in the Wembley one that was called for pass interference. So Tomlin challenges the non-call. And it's like, what is it? 3 out of 50 pass interference calls have been reversed so far.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Great.
Yeah, and so Tomlin knows that. And in this case where it wasn't called, the odds are probably 1 in 100 million to the 25th power. But he does it anyway, and he's basically just going to Brad Allen and Al Riveron in New York. I don't care. I'm going
to
lose my timeout.
You know, and
they would have had a minute, you know, had Vinatieri made the field goal. They would have had a minute to try to get into field goal range to win it, but with only one timeout because he had just blown two on these two challenges.
Right,
but Tomlin did not give one, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't care. I'm doing this to show you guys out. And I really love that from Mike Tomlin.
Yeah. Go Tomlin. Cracking stuff. And I loved your work today, Mike, as ever. We mentioned patreon.com/ I mentioned it and then you crashed the plug as you often do. So I'll do it clearly for you. patreon.com/ Mike Carlson, FMTE. Get involved with that. At Carlson Sports is how you follow the big man on Twitter. Cracking work, man.
Oh, thanks, mate. And, you know, good show on Sunday with the BBC. Sorry that there were, you know, we need more London games just so we can do more shows.
We can do more of that. Well, I will, right after this, I will compose an email to Commissioner Goodell on that very subject. Then I'll get Harry to proofread it and then I'll send it. You can maybe add a few little bits from wherever you end up in Amsterdam and behave yourself out there. Don't get arrested and we'll see you on the show next Wednesday.
Okay, great. See you then.
Take care, man. Cracking stuff from Iron Mike on the basis he makes it back from the dam. He will be back on the show next Wednesday. I look forward to that. Don't forget our daily fantasy tournament this weekend for listeners of the show and just the listeners of the show. Get involved. fantasy.paddypower.com/league/NatCoombsShow. It is free to enter. You got 60 grand of theoretical money to pick your team. The player with the most points wins, and there are £1,000 cash prize pool. So there will be plenty to go around. What's not to love there? Alistair Kirkwood, exclusive interview pod. That drops tomorrow. Look forward to it. And J-Bell in the house on Friday. See you then. Bye for now.